Next item on the agenda is public hearing, consideration of amendments 4BAC 20-720 pertaining to restrictions on oyster harvest, establishment of 2009-2010 oyster harvest rules. Dr. Wesson, good afternoon. These three separate handouts?
Three separate handouts. All right, we are doing our normal fall thing that we do, resetting the seasons for the oysters. We're still trying to stay in keeping with the guidance of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel and the Oyster Heritage Program for the Rappahannock River. And the things in your packet all reflect different items involved there, and you'll have to approve several things. We'll have the public hearing on the seasons. We'll also have in there two notices, one notice to continue the last time that we have to do a buyback for large oysters for the area below the Rappahannock River Bridge. Also, we're having the seed plants that we've been doing. We have a notice going out for people to sign up to work in the Potomac Tribs to do those seed plants when we're there following them, so we can get the data on the cost benefit of doing the seed transplants. And then the final thing is we'll be asking for a public request for a public hearing next month to make one little change in Regulation 610 so that you have to have a harvest permit to work in the Rappahannock River. And we've been having trouble with when somebody had called for a violation. In some cases, they're supposed to, when their permit's taken away, come for the commission to be reinstated. But in some cases, they were circumventing that and just going and being an agent for somebody else and going right back to work the next day. So we've made a little change to 610 that we're advertising for next month to stop that. So just starting back to refresh your memory, this is the Rappahannock. If you remember, we're rotating these areas down here. This year, Area 3, which is the bridge is right up this line, is open, and that's where we'll be having the buyback. And Area 5 is Temple Bay, and that's just the normal season. This area up here in the Rappahannock hadn't been open for 2 or 3 years, and that's up in Maranica. That'll be open new this year for hand scraping, because we've been waiting for some seed plants to get large enough to be harvestable, and so they are ready now. We also have a blow up on the, in case you want to see the Area 3 blown up. It's again, this is a bridge going across here, and this area is where we'll be buying orchards back, and this area is the southern side of the Rappahannock River, if you'll call it the Temple Bay area, and that area will be open for just normal harvest. We also are rotating in Tangier and Pocomoke, and in that case, we only have a 2-year rotation, so they're coming back for the first time in that area to go back in there that we did 2 years ago, so we'll be able to see how well that's actually starting to work. In your packet, this is the first recommendation that in the regulation that you got. These were the seasons that staff set up for first consideration, and because Mr. Fox was away and we were kind of delayed on having the shellfish meeting, we didn't have it till last night, and so that's the first time the industry got to look at it. And we actually had an interesting meeting last night, and we had some changes in the seasons that kept the length the same, but we readjusted the starting dates. When I first set these seasons back in August, everybody thought that the Gulf was pretty secure and things were going okay down there, and we probably wouldn't need to start the seasons off as early as we had been, trying to let the oysters get a little bit fatter for November. But there have been some changes in the Gulf, as it always seems like there is in the fall. And now Texas, I don't think, is open until the middle of November, and Louisiana's not open until November, and Mississippi had some closures from some rain events. So oysters are very scarce, and the industry wanted to actually get some areas open in Virginia for October so that they would have some things to shuck. Even though they're not the best oysters at that time, it's still, if no oysters are available, they're better than nothing. So we had the shellfish meeting last night, and the first recommendation of the shellfish committee was that everything on the western shore, except for the seed plants, be open October 1st and stay open until March 31st, just to disregard the chart. And so that's one motion that was made at the meeting. But after conversations, since staff would obviously not support that, we went into further conversations, and this was the second motion that they made for rearranging the seasons. And it's very similar. All we did is just took the Area 5 that we had had in December and flipped it into October, and we slid the James River area over and started it in October, and we moved the Great Wacomic over to start in November. That's the only changes from what you had in the regulation that you saw. That's pretty much, basically we're holding things very similar to what we have been. We're just keeping the length of the season about the same. The only big change in the length of the season that there was concern with at the shellfish meeting, we always start off the fall blind, basically, on stock assessment, because we don't start our stock assessment until the middle of October, so we can't tell you what's out there exactly. We made a few looks around the city, but from what we could see and what there seems to be in the Rappahannock, it looks like in these two areas that are going to open up, they've not gotten any spat set since we started this rotation. So it's been about 3 or 4 years since they've had a spat set. So the numbers there are lower than any of the areas that we've opened before. So it didn't feel like that these areas would last more than a month of harvest. But in the motion last night, when they readjusted these seasons, they also made the motion that, included that motion, was that ask me to come back to the commission in October and request a public hearing in November to reconsider opening Area 5 back up if the catch at the end of the month looked like the catch per unit was as good as it had been at the beginning. And we had kind of planned on doing that anyhow, so we're perfectly happy to do that. But they wanted to avoid emergency regulations, so we'll come in early and ask for a public hearing in November, and then actually do the same thing in November and ask for a public hearing in December for Area 3, should there be more there than we think that there is. So we ended up having a very reasonable meeting and left okay. So.
Questions of Dr. Wesson? Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One, I'm reading the report about the meeting that I guess occurred yesterday. Would the first motion have basically scuttled the rotational?
Yeah, so the first rotation was to stop everything and just have everything open non-stop from October to March.
Mr. Fox, chairman of the Shellfish Committee.
The reason expressed by the watermen, and some are here, they can elaborate about the state this, was that they felt that if everything was open, then there would be lower pressure on everything because boats would disperse. And also that everything would be worked. And it was a strong feeling of the watermen present that working the grounds removed the silt and therefore allowed the shell that remained to be exposed for spat set in the summer. That was the logic they gave. However, it was... I think it was expressed by myself and by Jim that we didn't think that this commission would approve that, and so we went to a second alternative, which is what Jim has just presented to us.
Okay. further comment? Any questions of Dr. Wesson? Thank you, Jim.
Sure.
This is a public hearing. Who wishes to be heard on the matter? Mr. Smith. Good afternoon, Mr. President. How are you?
Mr. Commissioner. Ken Smith. I appreciate this opportunity to speak. Mr. Fox has it partially right, what he said about the water and wanting the whole river open. The reason that we'd like to see the rotation stop, and this makes perfectly good sense to me, that we're going to shut seasons down. We go in, and if we work a piece of bottom, once we stop catching a 3-inch marketable oyster that we can make money on, we move to another area. Bar will open and close itself for that reason. Then if the rotation system is gone, we come back the next year and we can catch that oyster that was 2.5 inches and it will be 3 inches. And what we're doing is we're trying to catch the oysters before the oysters die. Now, Mr. Fox, we talked last night. Mr. Fox went and put, and you correct me anytime I'm wrong here, he put a shell on his bottom in the Great Wicomico. And he came back last year, they worked that piece of bottom. And the oystermen went in and they took the marketable oysters off of Mr. Fox sold them. Mr. Fox sold those oysters because he did not want them to die on them. He sold them before they would die. Now, I think Mr. Fox is going to go back there this year and he's going to work his bottom again. As a matter of fact, I know that they left small oysters on your bottom. And I found that out since the meeting last night, that they did leave small oysters on your bottom. And he's going to probably go back there this year and work that bottom, and he's going to get those oysters back up off that bottom before they die. Mr. Fox, by doing that, he's trying to get the optimum yield off of his shore. And I think that makes good sense, and I think the state should be doing the same thing. And as a matter of fact, code, and I don't know how you do these codes, but 28.2.203 talks about, in number one, it says conservation management measures shall prevent overfishing while achieving the optimum yield from each fishery. Optimum yield of a fishery means the amount of fish or shellfish which will provide the greatest overall benefit to the Commonwealth, with particular reference to commercial fishing for food production and to recreational fishing. So, I mean, I really think that the code's on my side here when it says that. Not to mention that I think it makes sense. Dr. Wesson said that a motion was made to open this thing up. It was not just a motion. It was voted on. It was an 8-1 vote. The only person voting against it was Chesapeake Bay Foundation. All of us have our opinions one way or the other about the Bay Foundation. But I think it's a good argument, and I think code is on our side to do this. There is no scientific evidence that this rotation system is working. There is, you don't even know how many oysters are being taken off the beds. I mean, Dr. Wesson has expressed that himself. Dr. Wesson said that this plan is, and he said this last night, at best it was a guess what was going to happen. So there's no scientific evidence to support it. We don't know how many are coming off of it, so I don't see how we have a management plan at all. And certainly optimum yield is to get the oysters before they die. The watermen are in favor of this plan, that number one, of doing away with this rotation and opening it up and letting us work. And we asked for October through March. There were several reasons for that. That's how it used to be. We'd like to see some more in March because people up on the Rappahannock don't have the 17th of March crabs come in. The watermen on the Rappahannock either have to go all the way down the bay or stay home there without work. I must have missed something last night in the meeting. I left with the impression last night, and it was probably my mistake, but I never heard anything mentioned last night about disease and oysters were going to be hard to be gotten. Never once was that even mentioned in the advisory committee, and I left there last night thinking that the season was going to start in November. And I asked Roger, and he had that same impression. So I'm not going to argue that because I'm in favor of the first proposal, and I think Code's on my side by saying that achieving the optimal fishery is what we should be after. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Anyone else? Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Fox.
Let me make another comment.
Please.
Smith commented that the accurate records do not exist because we don't know what the harvest is coming off of there. There was a big discussion in the meeting last night about that. And the entire committee, Waterman and Oyster Shucking House representatives, all feel that the penalty for not reporting oyster harvest should be made very severe, and that the number of $5,000 was mentioned. I did talk to Jack today and learned that it is a misdemeanor, class one misdemeanor, and the fine on that can be up to $2,500 and 12 months in jail. So that,
or both.
Or both, and so that would appear to be fairly significant. If it's handled out of court and here by the commission, the penalty could be as much as 2 years removal of your license, which is also quite severe.
They have to be convicted of the violation prior to them coming here, though.
Yeah. So I don't know whether further action is required, but at least one member of the committee last night was willing to take it to the General Assembly, take provisions to ask the General Assembly to stiffen the penalty. And I promised I would bring that before this commission today. So
that's a good point, Mr. Fox. The only problem is we have a lot of laws that start out as class three misdemeanors, end up with class one misdemeanors. As a matter of fact, I did a study as part of my senior thesis after it took me 26 years to finish college that dealt with the disparity of sentencing in the blue crab industry. And you go from judge to judge to judge, and after you have a judge that's been sitting in general district court hearing preliminary hearings for murders, rapes, robberies, you bring one in for that, and sometimes we don't get the same attention as that. So that's a significant issue, and we try to educate, and I mean that in the most humble and appropriate term, the judiciary on the need to enforce these conservation laws. But you can make it what you want to make it. Unless the judge wants to apply it, then we have a little bit of difficulty. But having said that, just like I said to Mr. James a little earlier, you know, you don't give up just because that's the way the situation is.
To address what Mr. Fox said, I think, and it was a packer that brought this up, he was talking about that fine going to the person that was buying the oysters, because the waterman was carrying them. Somebody was buying those oysters and not sending that in.
Well, that could be addressed.
That's what was being addressed, and not the fact that the waterman was just carrying them up the road, but he was carrying them, he was selling them to somebody, and that somebody is not making the report. And it was felt that an officer could very easily follow whoever was putting them in the back of their truck and seeing where they were going.
Good point. Further comment or question? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, could you speak a little bit about the management plan itself and the role of rotational management in that context? And just going back through the work of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel a little bit, I think when that was approved, the outlook going forward was that we would have a rotational model, and then at some predetermined point, I thought it would be a review of the effectiveness of the rotational strategy.
Absolutely. We will review it, but we got to get through it in order to review it. But I mean, the theory behind it is we are trying to get optimum yield, and optimum yield is more, since we work with many partners and we work with many funding agencies that put a lot of money into orchard restoration. They have been concerned with the fact that if they invest money, that these orchards should get large enough to spawn once or twice or before that they are harvested. And in the sanctuary areas, that they actually stay there long enough that if some resistance develops, that it can be passed on to their offspring, the disease would go on and crop them. The three-year rotation was set based around disease because we know that disease starts killing at 3 to 4. So in theory, you get back around in time to catch most of them before they die. Now, it'll never work perfect because nature doesn't give us the spat sets exactly when we leave. As an example, last year, the area we were in Area 4 has the best set that we've seen, and those orchards, a lot of them didn't quite make it to market size, so they're going to have to actually live through 2 more years before we come back to them, and a great part of them may die. But at the same time, for the other people that are interested in the ecological balance, those orchards will provide a higher number of spawners in that time period before they do die. So the rotation strategy was trying to look at all the different things we're trying to work around. We had opened up an area that had been closed for more than 10 years, and the trade-off was that we try this rotation to see if you can get the benefits for the longer life of the orchards at the same time that you catch as many of them before they do die from disease as you can. We don't know if 3 years is the right rotation. 2 years may be a better rotation. That's the nice thing about us working in Tangiers. Now we have a 2-year rotation there, and that may fit the situation better than a 3-year rotation. We won't miss as many. So we'll be learning from all these rotation strategies.
Follow up, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, if I may. Jim, I appreciate that background. Now, in terms of your recommendation to us today, are you able to support the amended table 2?
Yeah, absolutely. That means when we start the season is an industry issue, and I'm very comfortable with coming back later and relooking at these places if they have anything more to be caught that we can add on to the seasons. So these seasons are just fine. Yeah.
I've got Dr. McConaughey, then Mr. Holland.
Oh, I was just going to say, I support you because in terms of reproduction, you need a critical mass of oysters reproducing on that. So rotating until we find out whether 2 or 3 is the best rotation time to maintain that critical reproductive mass, I think we should stick with 3-year rotation. And just because they reproduce, you may not get spat in the area that actually produced them, but you may get spat in other areas. So you may not replenish the same areas every year. So I think it's important to keep going with the 3-year rotation.
Thank you, Doctor. Mr. Holland?
On the same lines as that, what do you see the advantage of the 3-inch oyster staying there for the spat? How much more benefit are we going to get from that than we are the small oyster?
Well, that's a real interesting question that we're looking at right now. I mean, I don't want to throw monkey wrenches in all of it, but I mean, we are with oysters. We're learning all the time, and we had thought that these big oysters were the things that we wanted. Because in nature, if they live to be 5, that means that, and they're in a high disease area, that means that do they have some resistance that allows them to tolerance that lets them get to be 5 years old, or are they just lucky? So that's one question we're asking. And we have assumed that that bigger is better, because normally in a healthy orchard, the bigger they are, the greater their fecundity, because they just can carry more eggs or sperm. But we are also doing other projects right now, and the projects that we're doing with spat on shell in the hatcheries, it's we've been trying to figure out what's the best brood stock for the hatcheries to use to produce the spat on shell that private industry that can then take and put on their grounds and move forward in production. And so we collect a lot of brood stock for the hatcheries to use. They have, and especially now that we're using the triploids, because with the triploids, the males that we use that have been bred through VIMS and are tetraploids are the best genetic stock that we have for resistance. The ones that we take in for the females, usually we're taking females from wild stock that we breed with them so that you get as much of that good resistance from the male as you can, and you go in with a good female that's native. Because we don't have enough right now of females to do both, and we don't really know if we want to do both right now. But what we have found for the past 2 years is that when we take these big orchards in that we've saved, you can't get them to spawn in the hatchery. They have very poor fecundity. They have very low sperm and egg count. And if you step back, we found that kind of by chance this year, and we took orchards that were smaller. They had many more eggs, many more sperm. They spawn better. So that's a big question we're going to be looking at for the next couple of years, is that are these orchards so sick once they get to be this big size that, yeah, they're living with disease, living longer, but are they contributing to the overall population? They may not be, because the sickness may not be killing them, but it is making them sterile. So that's a big question, and that's all falls into the rotation strategy. And, you know, we may be looking at different things 2 years from now than we're doing right now, but we kind of have to run through it and continue to watch these things every year to see how we're progressing. So,
Mr. Bowden?
I have a question for you, Tim.
Yeah.
You know, we had Blood Ridge and Rappahannock River closed for many years.
Yes.
We had some large oysters down there that were very weak. But overall, the standing stock above the breads that was worked every year was probably just as high, if not higher. So why do you feel like the rotation is working so well? And also, you know, yes, your oysters on a rock, if it's a healthy rock, for anywhere from 3 or 4 months old to whatever. But we know by age 4, a lot of them are succumbing to disease. We know that. So all the oysters you leave, naturally, we know the ones that spawn this summer have a good chance of making it to 3 years. The ones that are 1 year old have some chance. The ones that 2 year old have very little chance. And the 3 year old ones is pretty well negligible. So I really don't understand how the rotation system is working so well, because my personal observation is no matter what you leave there, that's all you're going to get. I mean, you know, you'll have some years we always have a spat set on these fish. That's not a problem we have on sea side. We always have that. But year after year, we have spat set. The oyster population doesn't increase because, you know, we're bringing them in on this end, but they're dying on that end, so we always have the same population. So I'm in agreement with Ken on this fact that, you know, I don't see where you're saving anything. And when you first started spawning clams on the Eastern Shore years and years ago, Bear Turks was one of the first people that drank it. We saved him chatter because I used to pat Tom for spawning. And come find out, they were worthless. They won 800 and 1,000 something. They were the one. But then when you think about it, you walk down the street here, how many 60-year-old women do you pass as pregnant? None. 50, none. I mean, you know, you reach a time in your life, and every animal does.
Please keep it on track, Mr. Bowden.
For orchards, unfortunately, we never get into senescence. A 4-year-old orchard is still a young orchard. They do have disease. And nobody is saying at this point that the rotation strategy is working. That's why we're doing it, and we're only doing it in two areas, is that just to find out if it does work.
I'll agree with you on one thing. When we were children, a 4-year-old oyster was a very young one. Now they're very old.
Yeah. But as far as an orchard goes for reproduction, if it was healthy, it would be just coming into its prime.
But we do know that for a fact.
Yeah.
We did this study years ago that 6 and 7, 8 year old oysters were the best vulture.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I note that Dr. Burrison from VIMS is here. Maybe he would, and he's an expert on oyster diseases. Maybe he has something to add.
If he does and he'd like to come forward, that would be fine. If he doesn't and he wants to remain seated, that would be fine.
I thought you got a specific question. I mean,
do you have a specific question?
I have another
question. Okay. Further questions, comments, matters before the commission? I'm sorry, Mr. Schick.
I just see that there's always two sides to the oyster shell question. My understanding from best science that VIMS has given us, three-dimensional oyster rocks do not need to be worked. They keep clean on their own. Flat oyster rocks, which is usually mostly private-owned beds, and a lot of the public beds too, do need to be worked because they're low-lying, they're flat, and they get silted over. So the idea of opening up everything to me just doesn't hold water with what the science is showing. Now, somebody said, well, you know, the oyster's going to die anyway, and I understand that. But if we harvest all the oysters that are over 3 inches, we aren't going to have any oysters to harvest. There's not going to be anything that's going to satisfy. So, but I also understand that they aren't setting spat. So, you know, and they're dying. So let's harvest them before they die. So the question is obviously a lot more complicated than we're going to be able to settle today. But I just don't see the sense in taking the whole bay and trying to get every oyster that's marketable size. On the hope that the 2-inch ones will come back and be 3-inch ones next year, and it's just not going to work. That is not going to be a long-term solution for the reproduction of oysters. The federal government has mandated, because of their EIS study, that we've got to go with a natural oyster. And by opening up the whole river and scraping the whole bay bottom, is not going to achieve that goal.
Yeah, you will.
Further comments?
One more question.
Mr. Bowden and then Mr. Robbins.
I understand, Kyle, before you got me confused. You're doing a very good job arguing most of it, which I'm fortunate I only have to go on one side. You know, my feeling is, and I've seen this firsthand, and thankfully I'm not an expert, because everything experts do is theories. And theories means it's a theory that's unproven most of the time. I think the most rational thing to do and logical thing to do, which is one of the things they breed out of you in college, the longer you stay, the less you have, would be, you know, we need to look at the stock when you're on a particular place and when they're dredging it. And you take most of the big oysters away, and we're standing there because the area is still open, and grinding, coming up with a dredge full of oysters, got two in there that you can keep. There's other ones, you know, they're banging against each other every time you pull them up, you end up killing them. The logical thing to me would be, before you ever get to that point, instead of rotation, that's what should be stopped. You should say, well, look, we're down to the point now that you've got a dredge full of oysters, and you've got 4 and 5 oysters in it. You're killing more than you need to be. And I think that would be a logical thing to do. And do you feel differently, evidently? Because you allow that to go on continually.
It's just, I don't know how you would manage for that.
I mean, logically, though, that would be the thing to do. Save those oysters instead of letting them keep grinding on them time after time.
Logically, in many cases, the season runs longer than it should, and we're into that phase. But it's a very hard line to work when you don't have any control over the workforce. I mean, if we had limited entry and we could say that we knew exactly how many people were going to be in the Rappahannock, then you could work on stopping at a certain point. But if we don't know if there's going to be 10 boats there or 45, there's no way you can hit that season right. And there is Orchards are just tough. I mean, they're...
We can't do our own survey. I know this year...
No, we do our survey, but we can't keep up with every area.
I mean, I've had people call me and complain about it. It's that fact. People who wanted to be...
I know. I mean, they call and tell me that it's...
It's killing everything.
I mean, the good watermen will call you and say it's over and that we should stop, but it's just very hard to do that because you don't know how many people are going to pile into these areas.
You know, I just feel like that's the logical thing to do that way.
It's obvious that is the logical thing.
We're killing everything. And the way we, this rotation system, we're killing them two ways. We're letting them die from disease. The 2 and 3 year old are pretty well wiped out before the 3 year rotation comes in. And on the other end, we're keeping everything open so they grind and grind and grind until they kill the small ones. I think, you know, maybe down the road, and I'm talking about a very short road, we need to look at a different approach. We need to look at an approach that we don't want people grinding stuff to death. And we don't want disease getting them. So we need to get in the middle somewhere. And, you know, opening everything today might not be the answer. The rotation period might be much shorter. You may want to open areas, a lot more areas for shorter duration. Instead of opening something for 3 months, for example, and you know that the best of it's going to be 6 weeks, you open that place up for 6 weeks and open up an entirely different place for 6 weeks. And that way you wouldn't have this waste of the resource. And you know, most of us watermen, regardless of what a lot of people think, are conservation minded. You know, my family's lived on the shore, well, before there was a shore, I don't know what they call it, back 500-600 years ago. But, I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is, this system isn't working, and we're allowing a great number of oysters to be killed for no reason because of a handful of people. And it's not most. Most of the people will move on when it gets difficult. But the problem is, there's nowhere for them to move. We've got it into small areas, and I'd rather see a shorter season in each location and have more locations open.
So every location is open and has stuff, so we don't have a whole lot of places.
Yeah, I don't say every location. I think Ken... I agree with them on some ideas. With that part, I won't say, but have them open for the entire 6 months or 5 months or whatever. But I believe you can have each individual places open for shorter periods of time and in a given year. If you were going to 3 places, for example, you could do it 5 places and just do 6 weeks at a time so you wouldn't have people grinding all the little ones to death and the disease killing all the big ones. But that's my thought. That's somebody that, you know, I'm not educated. It really doesn't hurt my feelings.
Put into a motion.
I'm not going to complain about that.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My colleagues made some very good points, I think, and raised some good questions for us to think about as we go forward. I think that type of management, though, if we were to actively manage by catch per unit of effort, would really take a lot of control, and it would take a different management regime to pull that off. But the... to the point about optimal yield, I mean, that Ken does raise a good question, and we should be concerned about that. But I would submit that the Blue Ribbon panel and this commission were concerned about that in the design of the rotational management strategy. That strategy was designed to achieve optimum yield. As Jim points out, though, it was also designed to take into consideration some of the longer-term ecological goals. And the issue of trying to allow the oysters to evolve some sort of disease resistance is a long-term objective. I mean, it's a long-term objective, and it's also a difficult one given the fact that we're at such a low level of abundance with the stock. But that's a long-term management goal, and I think it's fair to try to incorporate that in our management plan. I think we've done that to the extent that we can. I think it would be premature at this point to totally abandon the rotational management approach. The idea was, in an adaptive management sense, that we would move forward with it, evaluate it after a few years, but we haven't even had time yet to go through one full rotation. So we're still early on in the process, I think. And if at the end of the line it proves to be ineffective, then obviously we'll have to adapt our management approaches. But I think right now it would be premature to throw that out. The rotational strategy has been very effective with some other molluscan shellfish, sea scallop fishery. Went from about an 18 million pound a year yield to about a 55 million pound a year yield. One of the key differences there, though, is that those rotational areas are designated based on recruitment. So when you have an area where you have
very high recruitment. That area is closed, and that's allowed to lay idle until it's ready for harvest. In this case, it's a little bit more fixed in nature, and you know, we can't count on a steady spat set or steady recruitment to the area. So there are complicating factors with this resource. It's not a simple question, but given the effort that's gone into this, I just think it'd be premature to abandon it. But I would support the committee's recommendation here today.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman.
Dr. McConaughey.
In addressing Mr. Bowden's comments, I think if you look at the Rappahannock River number 5 and number 3, as Dr. Weston's laid it out, it looks like it's a built-in experiment to look and see. We're going to harvest it for 3 months. What's left? How much have we taken off of there? And maybe we'll open it again, depending. But it does look at.
It is actually 1 month.
Well, it'll be open for a month, and you mentioned you might come back and open it again. But at the end of that month, you would know, get an idea of what has been harvested and what might be left. So it kind of addresses what you were saying, is should we keep it open? We don't have a lot of data on that. This would be a perfect experiment to look at that.
Thank you, Doctor. Further comments? Matters before the commission. Mr. Bowden?
I've been fought all morning. It looks like I'm going to make up for it now. I have no problem with some of the Rick's using sea scallops was totally inappropriate. They're not challenged by disease. All that problem was caused by overharvest. And the best way to handle overharvest is reduce harvest. In a case like this, harvest is a very small factor. Disease has been really, years ago, I'm not saying, in the 40s and 50s, overharvest probably was a big problem. The stock is so low now, it's not overharvest causing the problem, it's disease causing it. And disease has been the primary cause since in the 60s. And we got it first on the seaside, and it has eventually migrated a lot further up the bay in recent years. I find it hard because if we hadn't had the Rappahannock River below the bridge closed for so long, I could easily buy into the rotation period more so than I can now. Because the fact was, when it was opened up, there was no more oysters down there than there was above that had been worked every single year. So you had all that harvest coming off, and you still had just as many in that area as you had below the bridge. Now, in all fairness, it might be apples and oranges. There might have always been more oysters above than below. It's something I don't know the answer to. But it's clear that most of these rocks are silting over. We deal in the mornings with habitat, and a lot of it is erosion or accretion. I mean, we're going both ways. The sand's traveling. Mud travels. Everything travels. The first thing somebody does when they buy a waterfront home is cut all the trees down so they have a better view. Well, then the erosion, everything they do ends up in there. So that's my problem with that. It's too late for us to do anything this year. I realize that, and even with Mr. Smith's suggestion, I don't think I can favor that, and I'm a waterman, and I think it's really what needs to be done. But I think we got plenty of, no, we don't have plenty of time. Most of the watermen are 60 years old or more, so time, I'm 55, and I'm a baby into our association. We need to look at other things, and some of the things I like to look at is the fact that maybe we have more areas open at different times for shorter periods of time, so we won't kill all these little ones. We know, and I know you can't predict how many people is, but you can predict it's less and less every year because there's less and less of us every year. The license sales has just been downhill. But, if it wasn't for the Rappahannock River situation, I could favor this. But knowing that what went on there, it got left alone. All you had was toad eggs and everything. I mean, the oysters were very poor quality. A poor quality oyster is not going to be nowhere near as productive as a healthy oyster, even if it's twice as big. And that just is common sense, So that's the problem I have with the whole thing. And I think Ken is kind of on the right track. I think the real answer is somewhere in between of opening everything all up at one time and leaving it open for 4 months, I think that's not right. But I think we should have more areas open for shorter periods of time. And I think that's something you really need to look at in the future, because, you know, when you have watermen calling, and you say you have them calling you too, calling because people are there grinding and killing all the little oysters. And I'm not even going to share the comments they tell me you made to them. And it just, you know, we're just not taking the right approach. We need to try to save oysters on both ends, the big ones and the small ones. And we're focusing on the environmental communities want of big oysters. It just isn't happening because of disease. You can leave, you know, if that was the case, Blood Rappahannock River would have got Blood Bridge. The ships would have started having trouble running into oysters because it was closed for so long. They'd been, but that's not the case. We're losing them to disease. And, you know, maybe he can shed some light. Maybe the disease is waning, but I don't think so. I think, you know, we have good years on the seaside. We always have strikes, and we're in a lot better position than they're on the back. But, you know, if we get a few years where we have heavy rain like we had this summer, there's a chance that oysters will survive through the disease, even though they have died bad this summer. But, you know, that's my whole concern. We need to try to do something to address both ends. The oysters, and now we know somewhat in theory, because you took the big spawners that are not as productive as once thought, or maybe even as they once were. At one time, they probably were productive. Yeah. That's the only reason I really have a problem with this whole situation is I think we need to make it more areas for not short periods of time. You'd have the same effect because you would have, you know, no more openings than you originally had as far as days being able to work. You keep people from killing all the little ones, yet you would get some of the big ones from every area before the disease died. But you would make people quit before they had to get down to measuring every oyster, and they wouldn't be killing all those little ones. And I think that's the approach we really need to look at in the future.
For the comments, the matter is before the commission for action. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there have been a lot of good points and questions raised here during this discussion, and I think we have a lot of food for thought as we move forward in the bigger picture. But at this point, I would make a motion in support of the amended staff recommendation that reflects the committee's work to approve Table 2 for the public ground season.
For a second to the motion, second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion?
Just one comment.
Mr. Holland.
I will support the motion, but I think all the comments today should be taken into consideration for next year's recommendation. We had some very, very good comments.
Good point. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Dr. Wilson.
I need the approval of the two replenishment little programs of buying back the oysters and the doing the seed harvest that we had notices for in there, and a approval of a public hearing in October for 6:10.
Okay. The first matter deals with the buyback. Mr. Tankard.
Move to approve buyback programs for seed and 4.25-inch oysters.
First staff recommendation.
First, yes.
Is there a second to the motion? Second by Mr. Holland. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. The next item before the commission is the advertisement for public hearing that deals with the loophole pertaining to agents.
Move the adoption of the resolution for staff recommendation.
That would be for a public hearing.
Public hearing.
Excuse me.
Motion made by Mr. Holland to go to public hearing on it matters. There a second? Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Dr. Wilson.